Breakthrough.
You are now listening to Breakthrough News. It's 5 p.m. You're listening to Breakthrough News, and this is The Punch Out. We're following the news all day so you don't have to, giving you everything you need to know about what's in the headlines and what should be. And yes, we are back with you here on The Punch Out, 6th of May, 2021, here on Breakthrough News. Very happy to be back with you here. Very happy to have you with us. We got plenty for you here on the show. As we always do, we're going to be talking about a just unbelievable spate of anti-democracy laws being passed by Republicans around the country, specifically in Florida. But before we get to that, we want to start with the Palestinian struggle, where active resistance to Israeli apartheid is continuing. The daily struggles against Israeli apartheid are grinding on in Palestine. Some you hear about, some you don't, but the underlying oppression and resistance is a daily affair. Now, most recently in the international news has been the struggle of Palestinian families to remain in their East Jerusalem homes in the neighborhood of Sheikh Jarrah. Israeli settlers are using a legal maneuver to forcibly evict six families in the area, setting the precedent to remove the other 30 families that would remain. As Al Jazeera reports, quote, since 1956, a total of 37 Palestinian families have been living in 27 homes in the neighborhood, including 28 refugee families who were ethnically cleansed from their homes in Jaffa and Haifa in 1948, end quote. And the issue really just opens up a window into the brutal past of the Israeli occupation and its ongoing apartheid realities. After Israel forcibly expelled millions of Palestinians in 1948, East Jerusalem became a part of Jordan. So Jordan and the UN offered Sheikh Jarrah to families who had been pushed out of both Jerusalem and, as mentioned above, other parts of Palestine. 1967, however, during the Arab-Israeli War, then Israel seized even more land, including East Jerusalem. Now, as part of the original granting of land, Jordan was supposed to register the ownership of the families, but did not. So these Israelis today are now using a 1970 law that allows Israelis to just take over land. But they're also claiming that the Palestinians have no legal ownership rights whatsoever because of the registration process way back in the 1950s. And so they have demanded that the court evict them and put their claim over top of it. Now, a district court has agreed that these families should be evicted. And that's despite Jordan's many decades belated effort here to provide evidence to prove ownership of the existing families. And now the issue will go to Israel's high court to rule on whether or not the families will be evicted. And the issue has become a flashpoint in the city. On Tuesday, demonstrators, it was the second straight demonstration that had been happening there, were repressed by the police when they gathered in the Sheikh Jarrah area to oppose these evictions. As Al Jazeera reported, the Israeli apartheid police, quote, sprayed skunk water, a chemically enhanced type of sewage water, and physically assaulted residents and solidarity protesters. Sheikh Jarrah is near the old city and near areas that are popular gathering spots for Palestinians in general, certainly residents of East Jerusalem. And that whole area has been a flashpoint in recent weeks as pro-apartheid thugs have rampaged through the streets, attacking people and property, and police have brutally suppressed the gatherings of Palestinians that were looking to defend their communities for these unbelievable mob rampages. Well, maybe not unbelievable at all, but certainly outrageous. And the closeness of the two events have made the Sheikh Jarrah struggle even more of a flashpoint, as it's just so deeply indicative when you take it all together of the overall realities of apartheid in Israel. And in recent days, some of the same forces behind the pro-apartheid mobs who chanted death to Arabs, that's right, that's what they chanted, death to Arabs, as they marched rampaging through the streets, are also saying they're going to enter the fray and Sheikh Jarrah. In fact, one of these thuggish parliamentarians who supports outright genocide against the Palestinian people is now opening an office in Sheikh Jarrah as some sort of provocation. And this is really part and parcel of an aggressive expansion of settlements in Israel over the past decade or so, a little bit longer than that, totally aided and abetted by the government there. Israel's entire political sphere is essentially united at this point in trying to create a quote-unquote one-state solution of their own, one apartheid state. And they're using settlements to change the facts on the ground as much as possible to make any sort of Palestinian state seem impossible. And ultimately, they want to force Palestinians into a Bantustan-like existence within the Israeli apartheid borders, similar, in fact, to the plan of apartheid South Africa to deal with the black residents of that country. And part and parcel of all these policies, something else that happened this week, a 16-year-old boy was shot in the back and killed by Israeli forces during protest against indiscriminate raids being launched in that young person's village. Now, of course, Israeli policies are buttressed by the total and unconditional support of the United States, since billions of dollars over there every year, and they go to great lengths to protect apartheid Israel in every international forum in which they can. However, inside the United States, outside of Congress, attitudes on the issue have started to change to a degree, and clashes over Israeli policy have started to become more prominent in the U.S. Congress. Elizabeth Warren, who in her career has been very pro-Israel, was herself forced to make a statement recently, one that was echoed by Senator Bernie Sanders, that there should be some sorts of limits on Israeli aid based on their apartheid policies and human rights abuses. These calls, of course, are going nowhere, but it certainly gives the uncritical supporters of apartheid a little bit of a scare, because they organized a letter of 300 congresspeople to say that Israeli aid towards Israel, should never have any conditions placed on it. But since that was never actually on the table, clearly they are worried about the shifting sands politically as solidarity with Palestine becomes a much larger phenomenon in the United States. Something that's been a major trend, by the way, since the Ferguson uprising in 2015. This is all also happening as the Palestinian Authority has postponed long-awaited elections in Palestine because Israel refuses to allow Palestinians in East Jerusalem to vote. While certainly a colonial outrage, that was clearly a pretext for Mahmoud Abbas, who leads the Palestinian Authority, to avoid what was almost certain to be an embarrassing defeat for his political faction, one part of a three-way split of the Palestinian party Fatah. And worse for Abbas, he was almost certain to lose to candidates pressing for a much more aggressive stance towards Israeli apartheid. Ultimately, this untenability of Abbas, the Israeli government's aggressive expansion of apartheid in every possible way, and the total support for the latter policies by the United States shows that the entire Oslo Accord-based process, the so-called two-state solution, the so-called international community's concept of how this could potentially be resolved, these long-running apartheid-based conflicts, is just totally dead. What happens from here? There's a lot to be said, but it certainly seems that resistance and struggle is the only obvious road for Palestinians to achieve some form of sovereignty. Florida became the latest Republican-controlled state to pass a sweeping bill limiting people's right to vote as a reaction to last year's presidential election. Now, this is despite the fact that after that election, Florida officials were crowing about how great their election was and how good the system ran. They've also noted that there was no fraud of any sort that they could point to in the last election. Nevertheless, they are tightening voter laws to prevent what even they seem to be showing is a non-existent threat. Now, the bill is mainly focused on curtailing mail-in voting. It's a 48-page thing. There's a lot of things here, but it makes it so that fewer people can receive early ballots. It also requires drop boxes to be located in a county voting office or an early voting location only during the period of hours for early voting, and the box must be staffed by a county employee. So that obviously means that it'll be a lot harder to create and use these drop boxes. The law also criminalizes any person who has two or more ballots in their possession other than yours and an immediate family member. So, you know, let's say you have a next door neighbor that has five people living there or whatever, you couldn't just take their ballots with you when you go and drop them off in that drop box without having committed a crime. Now, the basic point here is that they're trying to make it a lot harder for people to vote by mail, despite, again, there being no vote by mail fraud issues, in order to discourage people from voting. The easier you make it to vote, usually the more people vote. Pretty obvious, right? But Republicans tend to do worse when the overall electorate is a lot larger, And so they put in these laws to create a bunch of hurdles, which, you know, may discourage people from voting, or at the very least, create a lot of technicalities, which can make it easier to get rid of people's ballots. And the Florida effort comes as dozens of states are considering similar efforts, and one notable one right now being Arizona. So in Arizona right now, the state Senate is conducting a recount of all the votes in Maricopa County. That's where Phoenix is, looking for fraud. And this is despite the fact that multiple county-level audits showed there was no fraud. The effort is explicitly designed to look for a pretext to pass some tough anti-democracy laws. That's the only way you can really put it. But just to give you a sense of how absurd this entire thing has become in Arizona, the auditors that the Senate has brought in are now looking to see whether they can find traces of bamboo in various mail-in ballots to support a theory that tens of thousands of ballots were flown in from Asia and added to the Democrats' tally there in Maricopa County. Yes, that's right. They're examining the ballots to see if any of them contain bamboo fibers. But they know they need to try something because many of the popular Republican bills are so over the top. Some, by the way, even suggest criminal penalties for local officials who encourage mail-in voting. They're so over the top, even Republicans may not accept them. And in fact, there's one state senator who says she's blocking all voting laws of any sort until after the recount because she's sure that it's going to show massive fraud, which will make it easier to erect a whole range of hurdles that are laid out in these bills to mail-in voting, creating essentially, just like in Florida, multiple points which will allow ballots to be thrown out on technicalities. And again, one element of this is there even is one provision in one of these bills suggesting criminal penalties for encouraging mail-in voting. According to the Brennan Center for Justice, quote, as of March 24th, legislators have introduced 361 bills with restrictive provisions in 47 states. That's 108 more than February 19th, 2021. A 43% increase in little more than a month. Five restrictive bills have already been signed into law. Nine have passed at least one chamber, while another 26 have had some sort of committee action. End quote. I mean, this is really astonishing. There's actually no significant accounts of fraud in the last election, or any modern election, by the way. The loudest claims of fraud have been proven to be so fake, they are almost laughable. Yet, despite that, a significant number of Republican legislators backed an attempt to annul the votes in Congress. A right-wing mob stormed the Capitol to support them, and now dozens of states are making it harder to vote even when they admit there is actually no major threat of voter fraud. I mean, it's an outright attempt to limit democracy, to make it harder for voters who tend to vote against Republicans to vote. But really, it affects everyone, so it makes it harder for everyone to vote, all to ensure a Republican rule where their party mainly represents policies that uniformly do not have majority support, mostly. And the whole process is based on lies steeped in racism about Black, Latino, and Native voters. I mean, amazing. An amazing and stunning assault on democracy. And this is the model that the people in the State Department tell the world to follow. And that's going to do it for us here today on The Punch Out. We'll be back with you again tomorrow, 5 p.m. Eastern time. And don't forget that tonight, Thursday, May 6, 2021, we will have the Freedom Side Live. We will be starting at 6 p.m. Eastern this week, 6 p.m. Eastern. Normally we're at 8, we're at 6 today. So after you listen to The Punch Out, get yourself ready. Get over to @BT Newsroom across all your social media platforms or youtube.com/breakthroughnews and check us out on the Freedom Side, 6 p.m. Eastern. But again, we'll be back with you tomorrow on The Punch Out here on Breakthrough News.